There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Welcome to ModPath Chat, the official podcast of Modern Pathology, featuring interviews with authors and experts on the latest science, technology, and developments in the field of pathology. Your host, Dr. George Netto, is the editor-in-chief of Modern Pathology and the chair of pathology at the University of Alabama at Birmingham. Here's Dr. Netto.
Greetings from ModPath Chat. On behalf of our entire team, we thank you for tuning in. My guest today is Dr. Greg Lowers, senior member in anatomic pathology and the director of GI pathology unit at Moffitt Cancer Center. Dr. Lowers is an internationally renowned expert in the field of GI path. He has published over 400 articles and co-authors several textbooks, including Morrison and Dawson textbooks on GI pathology. He's a major contributor to the last two editions of the WHO Blue Book series on GI cancers. Greg is here today to discuss, on behalf of his co-authors, the recent study in Modern Pathology comparing the molecular subtypes of index and metachronous gastric cancers. Thank you for joining.
Thank you, Professor Netto. And since it's a casual discussion, thank you, George. It's nice to be with you again today. Thank you for the invitation.
It's a pleasure. And let's jump in to look at a study that we referred to. And before we do that, though, can you give us a little mini update on the molecular subtyping of gastric cancer?
Yeah, so this is the big news in gastric cancer, is that for many years, obviously, we all have used the Lorraine or the WHO classification. But over the last 7 years now or so, there has been several big studies, significant molecular studies done by either the Duke University with their Singapore branch with TCGA, as well as the Asian Consortium for Gastric Cancer Evaluation, who came with different classification. And basically, the TCGA, which is the one which is maybe the most recognized, now divide gastric cancer in big four groups: microsatellite stable, MSI, associated also with E-cadherin alteration and EBV-driven gastric cancer. And what's important about those classification, and one of my reasons to be interested, is because we are, I think, in gastric cancer where we were in colon cancer about 10, 15 years ago. Mm-hmm. So now we're starting to divide and understand the different subtypes of gastric cancer, which is a very heterogeneous disease. And we start to see now how we're going to be able to treat or develop protocols which are going to divide the patients in those different cohorts. So it's very important, number one, in the understanding, but also in what will be the management in the patients. And for pathologists and a non-molecular pathologist for myself, it's a way to understand from the get-go where the field will be in 5-10 years from now.
Awesome. And as heads up, the audience can look forward to a review article on the topic that you promised, and I know you will deliver for Modern Pathology pretty soon, and we'll revisit with you in more details about what's going on in molecularly in gastric cancer. So for sake of today's study, what was the cohort and what kind of tools did you use?
So maybe as a little feedback is, why did we do that study? Well, for two reasons. Number one, we all have experience that now our gastroenterologist colleague, because they pick up gastric cancer earlier in general, not only in Asia, but also slowly it's coming in the West, in the US as well, we can manage those patients endoscopically. So which is wonderful, we have those early gastric cancer. The second thing is that, obviously, since we save what I used to tell my fellow, we save the stomach. Those patients maintain their stomach and are treated effectively. Then the disease, the stomach is left behind, right? And then we can obviously imagine that the same element of carcinogenesis are going to be at play in the residual gastric mucosa. So that's number one. Number two is that there has been a couple of studies, one that I was involved with, that illustrated that we can actually mimic the molecular classification of gastric cancer by immunohistochemical studies and in situ hybridization. We still need to be validated to a higher level, but clearly it has been recognized by multiple authors. So what we've done was... is to go back to a cohort of Korean patients. And you may wonder why Korean patients. Well, to have a large cohort of patients who had index gastric cancer and then metachronous gastric cancer, obviously, those type of patients are relatively in common in the West. And I have also a wonderful colleague with a first author, Baekui Kim, from Seoul, who was working with me and was able to collect that cohort of patients. So basically, we look at a cohort of patients with early gastric cancer, most of them, there are few more advanced, but at least with a long survival. And we were able to then study them, not only their primary cancer, but the secondary cancer that they developed with a 4 years plus follow-up.
Excellent. So 42 Korean patients, and you use these surrogate immuno and FISH markers in order to decipher that molecular subtype without using NGS and what have you. Awesome.
Okay.
So you applied it to both groups. So what were some of the interesting findings that surprised you?
So the interesting findings were at different levels. Number one, only about 50% of the cancer, I think the right number was 51%, 51% of a cohort, of a pair, so to speak, had the same molecular phenotype. So that means in 49% of them, so in a significant number, there was a switch in the molecular alterations. There was no good correlation, whether it was related to age, sex, location, or even Helicobacter pylori infection, which had been controlled, obviously, in the majority of the patients. All those patients were treated for Helicobacter pylori infection. And in the second cohort, still about 16% or so were positive. So there was no good correlation. So what we found is that 49% of those cases switch the molecular phenotype. It was a little bit haphazard in all direction. What came in the second cohort is that the majority of the cases were related to alteration of P53, number one. But I think what was even more interesting is that the cases that were MSI high early in the cohort, in the index factor, were the only one that did not switch the phenotype. So it seems to be a very pure cohort, number one. So two things. The MSI high cancer remain MSI high or remain. The metachronous cancer was still of MSI. In the MSI, so that was interesting. The others were not. And the second thing also related to MSI is that the longer there was a lab time between the early index factor and the metachronous cancer, then they were also becoming MSI high. So there was so we are not really too sure where we're getting at, you know, exactly. But clearly we could identify a different, not say pathway, but progression of those early of those cancer between the index and the metachrons. So that was some of the interesting findings.
Intriguing. So in another hand, the ones that the metachronous or the secondary lesion came earlier, some of them, and maybe that's due to the field effect mechanism, maintain the field, the mechanism, the same mechanism in the index and the subsequent lesion. The ones that there was longer interval, there was a molecular switch. But it clearly cannot be blamed on H. pylori because that was controlled, right?
The question of H. pylori, I don't think that one single study will answer that question, and probably not this one, is we know by multiple huge clinical series that if you have index gastric cancer, you treat, obviously, Helicobacter pylori, there is a 50% drop in the chance of developing a second cancer. So clearly, it has a role there. We know that Helicobacter pylori can be associated with some modification also at the level of intestinal metaplasia in terms of carcinogenic sequence. So one wonder, and we, because we haven't looked at that, if the time of treatment of Helicobacter pylori within the whole sequence of those patients may play a role. For example, if they have been infected for only, let's say, 10, 15, 20 years, and you treat them, maybe it will have a different effect than if they have been infected for 30 or 40 years, obviously. We know that all those patients, it's a long period of time before they develop cancer. But maybe the time of intervention within the whole sequence of H. pylori infection will play a role. And this was not done in our series. It's another question.
Very intriguing. So basically, simply, you did EBV by ISH.
Correct.
And you did E-cadherin immuno, P53 immuno. We'll come how the interpretation in a second. And you did immuno for the MMR, mismatch repair genes.
Yes.
So that was, and on all these we can do in any lab, at least in the West and in the Asia Pacific areas. So, and for the P53, it's always good to remind people that you either had the ones that overexpressed P53, that you count them positive, and the ones that were completely null, those were. So this is appearing in many organs, in cervical and others, right? That the null is important. Yeah. It may indicate mutation.
The interpretation of the immunos was quite straightforward. One thing, actually, when it comes to MMR, we had one patient that may have been Lynch because it was a loss of MSH2, MSH6. All the others were apparently sporadic type of alteration of microsatellite instability.
Got it.
And there was one, also the thing we interpreted is for E-cadherin, obviously, is the cellular loss. There were a couple of cases where there was some cytoplasmic staining, which in gastric cancer, we don't really know how to interpret. You know, for E-cadherin, we relate that to the loss to cell-to-cell adhesion. But I think there has been some study done in breast cancer looking at the expression of a cytoplasmic expression of E. cadherin, but needs also to be investigated in the setting of gastric cancer. So it's, you know, we use the standard evaluation, but there also as well, there's probably some work to be done.
Well, great. So the last question, what is the significance of this? Is this gonna, I mean, clearly applying the method that you mentioned, that is topographic immuno-ish, is important, but as far as the finding in this pathobiology, do you see any points that are important for us?
Well, currently not, but well, for a couple of reasons. First of all, I'm not really aware that anyone has validated, I would not say validated our data, but that's one study reproduced, and I'm sure it's going to be reproduced in one way, shape, or form. And we're going to have, instead of 42 patients, we will have 500 patients. And as long as the study comes from Asia, I'm pretty sure there will be some, you know, significant overlap. We need to see if it also applies to the Western population. So that's
number, including African American population.
Yes, yes. So we need clearly to have a much broader understanding. Then when we take this out, you know, one of the questions that you brought up in terms of Helicobacter pylori infection, you know, we are going to have to answer those questions, you know, how it relates to the development of secondary cancer or not, a metastatic cancer. And then also the question related to MMR, because obviously, if you have an early gastric cancer, if we, you know, we start to classify them as well, then it gives us an understanding that the chance and the mechanism maybe to develop a second cancer are different. So there's no hard, are backed answers yet, but I think it should bring additional question as to the understanding not understanding the management yet, but understanding how we should start to stratify patients for management. In order to understand that, we need more patients. And I've been briefly in touch with some European pathologists to try to reproduce this. But again, one of the issues is that gastric cancer is obviously less common, you know, outside of Southeast Asia. And many of those patients have gastrectomy, advanced cancer, and to have a metachronous cancer is not so common. So it's going to take time.
But you'll get there, I'm sure. And you'll find a lot of great collaborators. So that's why I mentioned African-American clearly in our population here in the South. So we'll be happy to contemplate. Well, thank you very much. It has been a great pleasure to have you as my guest today. And to our listeners, we appreciate your input. So please provide us with any feedback that you may have and send that to our email address, journals@uscap.org. journals@uscap.org. Thank you, Greg. This has been fascinating and very educational.
Thank you, George.
Pleasure.
Any opinions expressed in this podcast are the speaker's own and do not represent the views of Modern Pathology, Springer Nature, UAB, or USCAP. Your ModPath Chat host and scientific director is Dr. George Netto. Producers are Christina Crow, Amber Jackson, Dr. Sarah Jang, and Dr. Catherine Ketchum. Technical direction is provided by Kaminsky Productions, music by Mitch Neubauer. Thanks to the authors, reviewers, and editors of Modern Pathology for making this podcast possible.